the show.
Well, hey everyone, and welcome to this week's show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson, and you know us here at The Boundless Show. For once in a while, me especially, just throwing something crazy on the table and just saying something pretty stark. So our entire roundtable this week is going to be that, I think, and I want to welcome our guests first. First of all, we have Martha. Martha.
Hello, Lisa.
Hey, here she is. Also, we want to welcome Serena Schwartz. Serena, welcome.
Hello, thank you.
So, and our Thomas Voss is back.
Hey, hey.
Thomas is back at the round table.
I know, that's a lot of pressure. I have to be stark today.
I know. A little bit stark, yeah.
Okay.
So, okay, we are going to talk about appearance and attraction and everything that surrounds that. And some people who just heard that burst into tears.
me included.
Some people were like, oh my word, because this is one of those things that everyone thinks about, but no one talks about because it's not, you know, godly, or it's just not, you know, you should just accept everyone. And we don't really, you know, sit down and pick out a bunch of verses out of scripture that say, you know, okay, here's what we should think about this. And there's so much that's subjective because attraction can be subjective. So, but we want to put it out there because this week's theme, we're kind of talking about that. And really, you know, I think there are a few things that play into this. And one is that idea, you'll hear a lot of people say, oh, there's someone out there for everyone. And it's just all shapes and sizes and all whatever. And you get in a room with 10 women and I can tell you they will immediately say, that is so not true because this has never happened to me. And no one has ever asked me out in 12 years. And, you know, a personal experience often is very different from what we will say as far as generalities when it comes to this. So, and I think in that we have a lot of insecurities. Many of us have things that probably were ingrained in us from kids, from something that was said to us, especially if it came from a parent or someone that we loved and trusted. And so working through all of those wounds, how has that played out? And then there's also a good healthy amount, I think, of stark reality and just saying, you know what? Sometimes there are things that you can do about your health and about your appearance and about something that really would be a good stewardship issue. And so what does that look like? So let's just start the discussion here by talking about our own selves and anything like growing up or now in our single years. Or Serena, you're recently married, relatively recently married.
What?
So woo-hoo. So that's why we had our own. We have to have one, you know, married person so that we can prove
here
that people still get married. That's
I
good.
Feel so special.
That's good. But let's just talk about that in general. Like when you think of this topic and you think of your own story, where does it lead you in your thinking?
I'll go ahead there.
Yeah.
In addition to the braces that are gracing my teeth at the moment, you all can't see them. They're amazing, though.
They look good.
They do good
Thanks.
Things.
Yeah, I wear them well. No, in addition to that, actually, I have in my left eye what's called a coloboma. And that is where the iris, which is the colored part of your eye, doesn't form all the way at the bottom. So my left eye and the pupil looks a bit like a keyhole. So growing up, I mean, I was born this way. I can see fine out of it. It's awesome. But growing up, you know, people called me various things. And, you know, some nice, like diamond eye. That was a nice one.
Yeah.
So I was like, yeah, thanks. Don't worry, I'm jealous.
Wow.
But then I also got some other bad ones. And I remember noticing this for the first time. I remember sitting on the counter in our bathroom noticing this. And I came down and I go, Mom, my eye's not like everyone else's. She goes, nope, that's just the way God made you. And I just, you know, I was probably about 5 or 6, and I just was like, that's the way you made me, cool. So I really never thought much about it till I was at a track meet. I ran track when I was little. And there was this girl there who had pigtails, and they like curled like the ice cream cones, if you know what I'm talking about. The pigtails, they're gorgeous. And I remember thinking, by then I was probably 8 or 9, I'm like, oh gosh, I'd give anything for pigtails like that. And I just remember admiring her. Well, no sooner had I been admiring her, she turns to me, sees my eye, and screams bloody murder. Around, there's about 30 of us there waiting for our heat to race. She goes, ew, look at her eye, get away from her. Ah! And I literally crossed my arms and I looked at her and I didn't say it out loud, but I said to myself, beauty's only skin deep, because I thought she was so pretty. So I remember at that time, that's just something God worked with me on was being confident in my appearance through this eye. Mm-hmm. So it's just, it's God's fingerprint on me. Mm-hmm. And so we all have something like that. It's when I went to get contacts for the first time when I was in ninth grade, the lady there handed me a colored contact without asking. She goes, here, this will fix that. Oh, and wow. I looked at her and I said, no, thanks. I said, this is the way God made me. Hmm. So there's things like that, that I think those of us that have something like this that we have to deal with when we're young, depending upon how we deal with it, it's something that it's just like, take it or leave it. This is who I am. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why I was able to do that at a young age. And then, you know, when you hit middle school and high school, you get more self-conscious. But mm-hmm. I think just instilling that in our kids and even in ourselves, speak to yourself like you would a kid. Mm-hmm. No, that's the way God made you, mm-hmm. you know? So that's something I couldn't change. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, for me, I was, quote unquote, a chubby child growing up.
Were you chubby or were you fat?
Let's just be honest here. I call myself fat. Everyone in my loving family calls me, oh, you were just, you know, you had baby fat until you were 22.
okay.
But, you know, baby fat only lasts so long, Mom. That's what I said.
like when you're not a baby.
Right, yeah, exactly. Okay. You know, and so I never really thought twice about it until, again, you get into school, and I went to a private Christian school in a predominantly wealthy, you know, environment. You know, God bless my family that we were able to be able to go there. But these kids were all really into fashion, and, you know, we all have tanning beds in our home, and, like, it's like this ridiculous environment to be in, and then you're the chubby kid, you know, so it makes it even better. To top that off,
you're on the cast of the OC.
Right, yeah, in Oklahoma City, like the real OC. What?
That's a different OC. Good.
So, and then to top it off, my brother was like this big football star. You know, he was like the stud of the school. Everybody knew him. He was like the good looking jock, you know. And then I was like the fat theater kid. And it really impacted me moving forward in life. But there was this pivotal moment, and I love my mom to death. So do not send in hate mail towards my mom, because she's one of the most amazing women you've ever met. I was walking through my house one day, and my brother was like, I was looking for a shirt, and my brother made the comment, hey, Thomas, just put on a shirt. We don't want to see that. You know, Chad's just joking, and he did that all the time. And then I hear my mom go, or a bra.
Whoa.
And I think I was 14 at the time, and it really... Like, I kind of joked it and laughed it off, but it kind of really impacted me deeply. So I love my mom to death, and she feels bad that she says this, and she's probably going to cry if she hears this. But but it just really did impact me, and moving forward, it made me more aware and more conscious of my weight, to the point that I literally started eating only 300 calories a day. And if I ate anything over that, I would beat myself up and not eat the next day. So I very much took a very rapid descent an unhealthy route to quote unquote try to fix myself. Mm-hmm. So my self perception was not good, and even moving forward all the way through college, and it took a long time for me to get to a place that I was comfortable with my body, mm-hmm. and knowing that it doesn't really matter how I look, because if somebody's going to fall in love with me, it's for me. It's not for this outer exterior.
Mm-hmm. So you obviously. Probably became, I mean, did you become dangerously thin? I mean, how long did you do that?
This doesn't help you guys at home, but I was probably 25 to 30 pounds lighter than I am today. Mm-hmm. I would consider myself at a healthy weight today. Mm-hmm. So I was pretty dangerously thin.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because now you're in shape. Now you work out. I see you in the gym once in a while.
That's right.
All right. That's good. So obviously, kind of came full circle in that, and just exactly what you said, God did something in you to give you a right perspective on that, and it's been a growing process, mm-hmm. but you've done that. Good.
Yeah.
It's good.
I think the thorn in my side has been acne. Of my mom struggled with it a lot as a child, and so she has a lot of scars on her face now, and my brothers and sisters and I went to the dermatologist since we were probably in seventh grade. It was just kind mm-hmm. of a monthly visit or a few times a year, I don't know. But even now in my late 20s, still have flare-ups and kind of wondering, okay, do you go to extremes and try Accutane? Because it is something you probably could change, or is it something you just accept and say, mm-hmm. forget it, I don't care, I don't know. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of actually figuring that out right now of mm-hmm. what to do or not do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Have you guys thought, and I guess, or I could throw in my own story. I mean, it's been interesting because I jokingly say, and I think I've said on the show too, how when I look back at photos of myself in my 20s, I'm like, Oh, well, there's a good reason why marriage eluded me in my 20s. I mean, I was just like a fashion disaster. I had like frizzed out hair. I don't even know if I wore makeup or if I did. It was just not done well. I mean, I just am like, what was happening here? I wore this, like, I remember actually owning a cardigan sweatshirt with Noah's Ark animals appliqueed on it.
Hey, that's hot. I don't know.
Thomas, you didn't ask me out then.
No.
Anyway, because you were like in grade school, but whatever. Anyway, so I think of stuff like that. And then throughout, I mean, you know, the euphemism for weight in our family was always that we were just Scandinavians. We were always Vikings. So you're just big, you know, you're just big boned or whatever. But always, you know, kind of battled my weight throughout junior high and high school and well into my 20s and stuff like that. So a lot of that and just a number of different things. Now, in looking at that then, was there a point where we kind of decided, okay, this is going to be a limiting factor for me? Because I think everyone, you know, looks at, there's a standard of beauty that kind of everyone accepts. And I think we realize that there's, you know, there are people out there that 95% of the world will say they are attractive because it's some arbitrary standard that they adhere to. But have you guys ever looked at your situation and said, oh, you know, this is going to be limiting for me when it comes to a choice of spouse? Or, you know, Serena, maybe you could speak to this because you were talking about your braces and your husband not knowing any different from you because you've had them since the get-go.
Yeah, well, I remember driving from the dentist that told me I needed braces and stopping in the Walmart parking lot, calling my mom and bawling my eyes out, mm-hmm. saying, marriage has now been delayed at least a minimum of 3 more years.
I would totally do that, too. I could just hear it in my head.
Yeah. I know. And, yeah, it was really hard. And my sweet mom just said, you know what? Braces aren't, you know, they are not going to keep your future husband from noticing you. And I'm like, well, maybe they're flashy, so maybe they'll attract him. I have no idea. No, but yeah, it was quite interesting because Dave asked me out after I had braces on. And that blew my mind. And I kept apologizing. And he was like, oh, no, don't apologize, really. I'm like, no, this is ridiculous. And I was like, you're dating like a seventh grader right now. And it's no, it's fine. So I think all that to say is kind of like I had the medical choice of doing it or not. And this goes back to health, which you mentioned, Lisa. You've got kind of two things on the scale here. You've got this not even achievable standard of beauty. At least you want to get somewhere close to it. Then you've got health over here. And how do you balance those two? And mine was either getting braces or getting 8 crowns on all good teeth to save the embarrassment of that. But that would be shaving down great teeth. So that's just not medically wise. So I was like, well, I'll just forget my appearance and go with the braces for 2 years and probably be single. And I got married and met this guy. So I don't know if that.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Can I just say, I know 3 beautiful blondes in my life that all have braces. And they've all met and gotten engaged while they've had braces in the last year.
So, single ladies?
So.
Wow.
Okay. So maybe that's the trick.
Martha's blonde, so all she needs is braces.
Braces.
Yeah. Well, I've already had the one.
Oh, yeah. Maybe you were too young, though, then it wasn't appropriate to get married.
That was my little random side note.
That's good. So, any other stories about, like, do you have something in your head that makes you think if this were just different about me, or if this were, you know, if I didn't have this as part of my story, this would be different?
Do you know what? This is kind of funny. This kind of doesn't deal with looks, per se, as it does with just my physical being. I've always, this is kind of hard to say, I've always hated my voice. I just don't like it, and I think it pushes people away. I think it sounds young, and sometimes immature. So it's been that one kind of drawing line for me that, you know what, I can change my appearance, I can control what I eat, but I still have my voice. And so through the years, I kind of always went back and forth through that. You know, I would have this eating disorder, and I had it because I could control certain things in my life. And then when I thought it was getting better, then I would realize that I still don't like my voice. And then I would go back to something I could control, like the food I took in. So it's that one kind of thing in the sand that I just can't seem to erase. But God has really been working with me on it. In fact, I actually just got done being on vocal rest and going to a speech therapist about a little over a month ago. And it was through a course of something else. I just thought I had damaged vocal cords. But then when I went in and talked to the speech therapist, she was extremely helpful. And I was very honest and open with her. And it was kind of, in a small way, God answering part of my prayer. You know, Lord, help me to accept my voice. Help me, you know, to cope with this, because it is the voice you gave me. And in some small way, he kind of repaid me and said, you know what, I'm going to give you this opportunity to basically, quote unquote, force you to go see a speech therapist, and she's going to help you learn how to speak properly. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of, you know, a catch 22 in a sense that it was beneficial in the long run. But that's kind of the one thing for me that I'm always in the back of my mind going to be dealing with.
Mm-hmm. I would say, Thomas, I'm sorry you have to be here to hear this.
It's totally fine.
I'm going to talk about breasts. And what I mean by that is I have a friend who lives in Washington, D.C., and there the thing to do after you get, like, after you're done having babies is you get a boob job. Mm-hmm. That's just what you do. And not that I'm terribly self-conscious of mine. Again, this is a little awkward. But I just didn't know what Dave's expectations were in that. And, you know, we're all afraid, honestly, of that honeymoon night when you unclothe, you know, and you are naked there. And it's like, is he going to love this or hate this? You know, and I think both guys and girls feel that way. And talk about being vulnerable. I mean, that there, it doesn't get any more vulnerable than that mm-hmm. when it comes to physical stuff. So I just remember telling Dave a bit strong and a bit in a snotty manner. I said, this is when we were dating. I said, just so you know, Dave, I'm never going to get a boob job ever, ever, ever. And I said, even after I have kids, I don't care if they're saggy and if they shrink, I don't care. Like, I'm just not doing it. So you can leave me now. And he looked at me and just started laughing. And I'm like, I'm serious. Like, there are women that do this. And, you know, for breast cancer and all that, totally understandable. And again, each woman can make her own choice on that. But I'm just like, they are what they are. And I hope you like them. And, you know, and it's just, it was one of those things that I just, I had to be firm with myself and be like, I'm not going to let myself get caught up into this. Mm-hmm. I'm not. Mm-hmm. And I had to tell him that. And he was like, girl, it's great, fine, I love you. Will you, you know, shortly thereafter, will you marry me? Came the next question from him to me.
Yeah.
So that's going on a little limb.
You know,
there,
it's interesting because we often talk about Hollywood standard of beauty and
yes.
how that affects men. And women often think, you know, well, guys have this
exactly.
Picture of what it is, and it's not true. I think women totally have that picture too. Because for all the YMCA locker rooms that we've stood in and we've seen what reality is,
so
we
true.
Still have this thing in our head that whatever it is, we are not it.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, it's so ridiculous. And then you know, you just realize, yeah. wow, that really is ridiculous because it's not even true.
Yeah.
Something's happening there with the cameras that is not reality.
Exactly.
Just spend one day at a public water park and you will feel better about yourself.
Oh, no, I've totally been there. Oh, my goodness. I've been
saying.
There. And it's like, can people at least please wear one piece of,
yeah.
you know? Yeah, you just
that are
like,
the right size.
Especially if you're over 55. Oh, I've totally seen that. My eyes. Okay, so what about then looking at, do you feel like you have prejudices then based on, you know, standards that you've had or things that you've thought of in the past that now are playing into whether, I mean, was there something with Dave, Serena, or, mm-hmm. or those of us that are considering dating and marrying someone? I mean, mm-hmm. just something that we think, because again, as I said on the front end of the show, we hold to this idea that there's someone for everyone, you know, attraction is kind of subjective, you just don't know who you're going to be attracted to, mm-hmm. you just don't blah, blah, blah. But really, we have those little mental lists, and we think of things, mm-hmm. and we kind of probably make judgments of people that even we're not aware of ourselves.
Mm-hmm. I remember a conversation I had with some friends. We were just talking about your type, and mm-hmm. they were talking about, like, the football type or the basketball type and mm-hmm. blonde or brunette. And honestly, I couldn't really come up with what my type would be, but mm-hmm. The thing I said is I've always imagined I'd have blonde children. I guess I have blonde hair, so it's possible with whatever, but... I
yeah.
don't know. It's kind of funny.
Yeah. Yeah. I think my type when I was like 25 had about 30 different characteristics, and now my type is like has a job and is alive.
Doesn't live at home.
Exactly. It's gotten a little bit more specific. So I don't know. What about you guys?
You know, I dealt with a lot of quote unquote, we'll say vanity in my past and stuff. And so thankfully, I'm kind of in a place in my life now where, you know, God has laid it in my heart to want to, you know, desiring a relationship and desiring a family. And as I've kind of gone into that and started looking at potential, you know, dates, I guess is what I'm going to call them. I don't know what the proper term would be there.
Ladies, are you a dating?
Ladies, are you dateable? Yeah.
Well, we don't know until you give us your list.
Right.
So what is it?
Coming up. So I quickly realized how much of my past that regardless of how much I'm okay with the way I look now, I quickly, unfortunately, am judging a lady on, well, I struggled with that. She should have struggled with that. Like, I mean, I know that sounds awful, but it's completely, you know, Satan's lie to me of, do you know what? You're fine. I lost you, but I can still hinder your relationships and try to relay that onto and project that onto the woman that you're, you know, you want to date. And so that's been a really interesting road now. This is the first, truly the first time in my life that I've encountered that as far as what am I looking for in a mate and what do I need to not let impact me in that decision? Because there are some amazing, amazing people out there. And if you just sit down and have a conversation with them, then all of those things that you instantly were like, oh, I can't deal with that. I can't deal with that, whatever it may be. They're completely gone, you know, because now God is sitting there like working through you and, you know, moving your heart for you. And yeah, it's amazing to me now as I get older, how ridiculous some of the things I did to myself were moving forward, desiring a relationship because of how really it's just Satan's lie trying to indicate what you should desire.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
I've heard that for guys, I've had several guys tell me this, that it's not so much a specific standard, especially when it comes to weight or whatever, of a size that a woman has to be or whatever, but the fact that she's putting effort in that direction. So a woman who, you know, and especially I've heard this a lot from like married women that if they get married and have a kid and then are in sweatpants like 24/7 after that, you know, that's what men refer to as letting yourself go. But putting on a few pounds because you had a baby is not an issue. But going out and like walking with the baby and stuff like that, guys see that as like, that's good. That's positive movement.
Absolutely.
That's, you know.
Yeah. In fact, I mean, I think that's a great, great example. You know, I will see somebody who is maybe of a larger size, let themselves quote unquote go, so to speak. They just don't care. And then I'll see somebody who is maybe their identical twin walk through the same door and they just show confidence, you know, they look nice. You can just tell that, do you know what? I'm leaving the house and people are going to be seeing me. And regardless of, I shouldn't care what other people think. She cares about herself enough and has respect enough for herself. At least that's how it comes across. And I would be more attracted to that, like instantly, without question. So I think that's a perfect example of if the effort's there, we don't necessarily see it as, oh, they're trying to impress us, but it comes across more of like, oh, look, they respect themselves and they have confidence in themselves.
Right.
That's exactly what I would say that Dave would say. Actually, I wanted him to be here today, but he has to work.
He's pretty awesome.
But my husband is actually, I'll just say, he's very buff. He works out. He is...
He's perfection is what she meant to say.
In my eyes. He definitely has his flaws. He's wonderful, though. But I remember being intimidated by him because I wouldn't call myself overweight at all, but I'm just not I'm not a fitness model, you could say, you know. And so I remember being concerned with all the girls that he was seeing at the gym. We actually had this talk last week. The girls he was seeing at the gym, I don't care how people say I'm beautiful, whatever. There's always someone more beautiful. There's always someone not as beautiful in my own eyes. And I told Dave, I'm like, babe, how, like, I'm so sorry. I will never be like her. Like, I can work my tail off. You know, I can never be like her. He goes, girl, but I fell in love with you. I fell in love with you. I don't want her. I fell in love with you. And that's been huge, just a confidence thing for me, because he has told me, because I've gained a few pounds since we got married, and he said, what matters is I want you to love your body. I want you to love yourself. And here's this guy, literally, I mean, he is so beautiful. He's gorgeous. But, and you know, when I compare myself and, but he's not into himself. He's not into the appearance. He goes, I want you to be confident and comfortable. And he goes, I love you for who you are. And he goes, yes, I want you to be healthy. And that's the thing too, that people, I feel like, with eating disorders, with anything like that, we can go to the extreme of, oh, just, you know, eat, you know, the second bowl of ice cream just because I'm okay with myself. That is not healthy either. That's a different extreme. It's no, this is the vessel that carries your soul, the only vessel you have to carry your soul through this life. How are you going to treat it? You know, and I'm not, again, there's a balance that we have to achieve. And I've thought recently, actually, before Martha, you asked me to be on this, I thought, what if we did not have bodies? Like, what if there were just souls and personalities walking around? You know how different you know, maybe I would have different friends. You know, I still would have married Dave, but maybe I would just perceive people differently because mm-hmm. I would see, Thomas, I would see your soul. Martha, Lisa, I'd see your soul. I'd see your sense of humor. And I'd be like, that is awesome. And nothing visual would distract me from who you really are. But yeah. that's not the way God made it. And that's, I've struggled with God because I too have struggled with a bit of an eating stronghold is what I would call it. And I'm like, God, why did you give us bodies? Why is there somewhat of a standard of beauty out there? Mm-hmm. And I think there's something holy to it. No, this is the vessel I've given you to carry your soul, to do the work that I've called you to do in this life. There's something holy to it. So treat it well. Treat it with dignity. Yeah. Do not hate that. But at the same time, don't let that be the end all be all. Because again, God always challenges us, look at the heart. God, mm-hmm. you know, man looks at the appearance, but God looks at the heart. So I'm caught right now in this tug of war yeah. with myself.
Well, because either way, it plays out as idolatry.
Exactly.
You know, either we are going to let ourselves go to pot or whatever, yeah. you know, and it's just that becomes a I can attain it, so forget it, or mm-hmm. we're going to go to food for comfort, or we're yes. going to do whatever, and there's going to be idolatry in that, or we're going to become so obsessed with it that it's just nothing else. We have right. no focus mm-hmm. on anything else. And I've thought to myself, you know, because like I said, I mean, for me, and now that I'm getting older, I have to work out. I know that if my butt is going to be less than the size of Brazil, I need to be out on the trail every morning. And it's just, I just have to get up. I'm up at 5:45 and I'm out on the trail.
Wow.
I am not one of these people. Please do not write and tell me that if I just keep it up, I will get the runner's high. I have run for over a year. I have not had this runner's high. Okay. I'm not expecting it anytime soon. I'm just out there doing it. Okay. But at the same time, I recognize that that's what I have to do to be healthy, to be. It was so mm-hmm. funny because the other day I was referring to something I was doing and a guy said to me, well, but that's totally, you know, you can't speak to that because you're an athlete. Like I am not an athlete. That was just the weirdest thing. And it's still, I couldn't even receive that. And I still can't, you know, because it's so, that is not my reality and that's not who mm-hmm. I feel. But it was just to think that and to say, wow, you know, I have taken some ownership for this, some of the things that I do, and I'm kind of making incremental mm-hmm. progress and stuff like that. And, you know, and honestly, some days I may just sit down and bust out a pint of Ben and Jerry's. You know, I'm not totally beyond that. So,
or Bluebell, which we now have in Colorado. Yeah. Super excited.
Yay, Texans. So, so I think it is exactly, Serena, what you said, just that balance of understanding, mm-hmm. wow, you know, what does that look like? And to look at it with a perspective of yeah. saying, what if we were only looking at souls? Mm-hmm. But when we look at, you know, at our circumstances, what is a healthy view mm-hmm. of that? And what does that look mm-hmm. like to take ownership of that?
Mm-hmm.
And really, bring Christ into the mix and say, what is going to glorify God in this and mm-hmm. the way that I treat my body and the way that I view other people? Mm-hmm. And I mean, there's so many aspects to that. It's a mm-hmm. relational aspect. It's a physical
yes.
aspect. It's a, you know, there's a lot yeah. in that. So
there's actually a verse. It must be the New King James Version because I've not quite read it this way before. But just this morning I was reading and this hit me. It's in Psalms 24. I don't remember the verse, but who can ascend to your holy hill? Who can stand in your presence? He who has a clean heart and some other things I'm forgetting right now. But then it says, and he who does not lift up his soul unto vanity. Mm. And I just thought, that's just a perfect, you know, verse for this. Do not lift up your soul into vanity. Yeah. I mean, have fun with fashion. I love fashion. I love to feel confident. I love to have what I think, you know, what is with the metabolism I've been given, you know, my body structure. I want to make it the best it can be. Mm-hmm. But may I not in the process lift my soul up into vanity. Mm-hmm. So yeah. Anyways.
That's good thoughts. So thank you, guys. I think this has been a good discussion and very real and helpful and, you know. We'll continue the discussion on the blog and beyond. And now that we've kind of all put our stuff out there,
seriously, there's not a Facebook.
Someone please write in with some encouragement for all of us. We're gonna just burst into tears and be like, oh. So, but thank
We're gonna
you
go
all.
Eat Ben and Jerry's now.
Exactly. Pick your favorite flavor. But thank you all for being part of this discussion. I think it's really been helpful. Awesome. All right. Hey, everyone. For this week's culture segment, I am joined on the phone or by phone or whatever. Mandisa is here. Mandisa, welcome.
Dad, thank you very much.
Hey, it's so fun to hear your voice. And well, you're not singing, you're just talking, but whatever. That's okay.
Yeah.
your talking voice is great, too. Okay, I am a big fan of your music, and I followed you on American Idol and all this stuff that other people, I'm sure, say. They're just like, oh, I remember you way back when and all that stuff. But no, I really have. And I really sing your music. And believe it or not, I was running this morning, and on my playlist, Love Somebody came up.
Oh, so, love that song. I don't get to do that as much as I would like to.
Well, let's just say that I like it. And I needed to throw in a little plug that if you're ever out touring and singing that and Toby Mac can't be with you, if you would please use me as I could fill in for his part. I'm just saying.
Well, look, because that's the reason I don't get to perform that song live very much is because I don't always have Toby with me. So I might pick you up on that.
Well, I'm just saying that I'm available. Okay.
Well, thank you very much.
I mean, I could do it. If you need me to audition, Mandisa ain't change your mind. It ought to be flipped by the end of this rhyme. Okay. I'm just saying. Okay.
Sounds great.
But that was probably concerning, and I probably just scared you and a number of other people. So that was from your album True Beauty. Okay, I'm just gonna say Mandisa, everyone who knows her, she's like a 2-time Grammy nominee, bunch of Dove nominations, all this kind of stuff. American Idol 5 years ago now, right?
5 years ago, yeah, to the day that I released my fourth album. I call it my fourth just because I don't know why people don't count Christmas albums, but the day I was eliminated on April 5th of 2006, and then my album came out April 5th, 2011. So
yeah,
not planned that way. It was just perfect timing.
That's fantastic. And of course, we remember you competing on the show. We remember your little altercation with Simon and all that went down with
it.
That. Exactly. So, for years prayed for Michael Jackson for every day. Okay. Can someone out there please take on Simon Cowell? One of our British
listeners. I'm out there taking on Simon Cowell.
Okay. Someone needs to start praying for him, because I'm just saying that there is hope. And we have a ton of listeners in London. I have met some of them. Could you people get on the bandwagon and get with this? So,
seriously, I take that very seriously because I think that if Simon, when he comes to know the Lord, I imagine it could be like a modern day Paul, because not that he's out, you know, saying bad stuff about Christians, but I just think that if God got a hold of that mouth, that there's nothing that would be impossible. So I really do pray for Simon, and I believe he's coming.
Yeah, and I just think, I mean, he obviously has influence, but just really, I think, underneath it all, a great guy who really has a lot of sense and just really could make a difference. So, I mean, I just don't want to discount the power of the Holy Spirit and say, you know, this is what I do. I just tell people what to do. I assign people to people. So someone out there, one of you listeners, Simon Cowell, I want to hear about it. Write to me, editor@boundless.org, and tell me that you're taking this on. Okay, Mandisa, first of all, now let's get into this business. Okay, hello, Jennifer Hudson. What is this about 106 pounds and counting, having lost all okay.
It's 115 pounds now.
Oh, my word.
I mean, it's something that has needed to happen for a long time, and finally, it's like I can see the finish line in my sights. And before, there were times that I felt absolutely hopeless about my weight, but now I can honestly say that with God, everything is possible, because this is seriously an area that I thought I was just destined to fight and to battle forever. And it very well may be the thorn in my flesh that for the rest of my life causes me to know that God's grace is sufficient. But I can finally say for the first time in my life that I feel like I'm conquering this thing, and it's not by my strength. It really is by the power of the Lord.
Mm-hmm. And I know even when you were here at Focus and you sang for us, you were talking about that, and you were saying, you know, this is just an ongoing struggle, and you had already lost, I think you were at like 50 or 60 pounds at that point, you know, and you just said, it's a long haul and you're going to go for it.
It is. It's not, for me, this is not just about the number on a scale, and it's not about looking a certain way. This has been, it's been an addiction for me, and it's been something that has really kept me from living the abundant life that I believe that God had for me, and it kept me distant from the Lord because I wasn't being obedient with my body. And so it was about so much more than just, you know, the actual pounds coming off. And so, yeah, it's something I feel very passionate about because I know a lot of people, they struggle in this area as well. So I am found to be talking about it quite often just because it means so much to me.
Yeah, well, and it's just a huge, I mean, just to see that milestone. I mean, I've kind of been, you know, I alluded to running this morning. I took up running last year and, you know, everyone says, oh, isn't it great just to feel that runner's high? And I'm like, no, I never feel that. I basically just go out so I can keep the size of my backside to a reasonable, I don't know, size. Right. I don't know. I mean, that's what I say. It's just like, okay, I just got to do this, you know? And it's not, you know, I've never been someone who was naturally athletic or naturally whatever. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of see where you're coming from and really just having to go for it.
Yeah, it started out very much of a, this is drudgery work for me, especially exercising. I didn't enjoy it. But thankfully, I mean, I have found some things that I actually enjoy doing now. I'm not a runner. I can do it for every now and then. But, yeah, I've never experienced that runner's high that people talk to. But I do experience
sure
a Zumba high, if you will.
Oh, yeah, so, I've done that, too.
It's a blast. I think if you can find something that you enjoy, I think that is half the battle, because I think that you would be more likely to stick with it. And so because I love dancing and I love good music, Zumba does it for me, and it's something I look forward to doing, and I burn more calories doing that than anything else. So I recommend that people find what works for them.
Yeah. Okay, so we're going to talk about the new album here in a second, but so what does your day look like? I mean, when you're obviously, you know, at times you're recording, now you're keeping up with your health, you're doing whatever. Do you have like any semblance of a normal life, or what are you what are you doing from day to day?
Well, it depends on what you call normal. I mean, I my job is not 9 to 5, and so I guess it's not normal in that regards, but I guess I don't have a normal day. I mean, I'm talking to you from California right now in a hotel room, and that's not really normal. I'm looking at the Hollywood sign, and there are times, though, when I'm in studio mode where I'm at my home in Nashville, and I go to the studio probably around a 9 to 5, and then I come home and cook dinner and watch TV. So, yeah, it just varies. It depends on what sort of season I'm in.
Yeah, okay. And you're from California originally, right?
Sacramento.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm from the Bay Area originally. So.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, hey, we just, FYI, just another little point of connection. Okay. that was just an aside. Sorry about that. but also, and well, here's another another point of connection. You are also single, as are many of our listeners. So
I'm not just single, Lisa. I am super duper single.
You are. Okay.
There's a difference.
Amen to that. Amen to that. Okay, now, I mean, is there anyone on the horizon, though, or whatever?
No, no one. Negative, zero.
Okay. Well, maybe you and I can pray for each other in that regard, because I'm just saying, you know,
please,
if you're not if you're not specifically, what we say here at Boundless, if you're not specifically called to celibate service, you know, then we need to be in prayer. We need to be in prayer for you.
I really do not feel that I am. I really do feel like God has a husband for me. It can be frustrating waiting for it, but I've learned to bring my frustrations to him. And I'm not going to lie, there are times when it gets very, very difficult, but I'm learning that I don't just have to keep that in, especially with, you know, with my weight journey. I'm so used to stuffing down my emotions that now I'm learning to really let them out. And so I've got my crying sessions with the Lord that happens every now and then when I feel like I can't take it. And I think he gets that and he understands. And more than that, I think he wants me to bring that to him. So certain, it happens for me. I don't want people to think I'm holding on and being so strong all the time. Sometimes I'm crying like a little baby because I'm lonely.
Well, exactly. And I think, you know, we talk about this all the time. And when I've done interviews with different radio stations out there, you know, I say I hear from more and more women who say that there's this sense of shame for even saying that they want to be married. You know, like it's some kind of like people will tell them, oh, don't talk about that because that just means you're not trusting the Lord, or you know, be content or be whatever. And I'm like, you know what? It's about time we say something, because first of all, the church needs to be in the business of making good matches. That's what I say.
Sure.
You know, and need to start helping singles along that continuum and helping them mature and stuff like that. But really to in that celebrate and honor marriage and family and say that it is for most people and acknowledge that and, you know, get all these young adults, you know, stop being so crazy and stuff and grow up and get it done. Okay. So.
And give them permission to feel what they feel and not feel like they have to put a brave face on and act like everything is great. Sometimes it's not, and I think that we can be real with that.
Right. Okay, which is your album? What If We Were Real?
Yes.
Basically written out of what you described as just recognizing the struggles, the ups and downs, the fact that sometimes you will fail. And I know your first album, True Beauty, like I was saying, you know, I sing that one. Another one, Shackles. Let me just put that in there. I cannot sing those high notes, but when I go on tour with you, I will dance around on the stage with you. Okay, so that's just
great.
Okay, so when we do that, that'll happen. But What If We Were Real, definitely kind of a little departure musically. You've got some new styles in there, especially with the song What If We Were Real. Loving it. Was listening to it again this morning.
Thanks.
And definitely stomping to Stronger as well, because that just really got me fired up. So,
awesome.
So tell us a little bit about just thematically this album and kind of where, because I know what I thought was so fascinating is what you said about how where you were when you started writing the album was a different spot from where you were when you finished. So talk a little bit about that.
Absolutely. Yeah, when I started, I'll be honest, I felt hopeless about certain areas in my life, really the areas we've talked about already, being single and also with my weight. And I was just not in a good place. And I was stuffing those emotions down. And I believe that God started showing me that it was okay to feel that, but I had to let him in and let those feelings out. And, you know, when I began this process, that's when the songs, What If We Were Real, it was birthed out of that. And there's a song on there called Just Cry, where I have learned it is not shameful to cry. It actually is very cleansing and healing. And like those songs are birthed out of that period, but because I was doing this and handling my emotions and really being honest with the Lord and with the safe people that God had given me around myself, I believe that God brought me to a place at the end of the album process where I had never felt closer to him. I'd never felt just in a better place in my life. And my circumstances hadn't changed all that much, but my perspective had. And that's when, you know, the song Lifeline was the last song that I recorded for this album. And it's all just saying, you are my everything, God. You are my rescue. You are my strength. And I don't believe that I would have gotten to that point if I hadn't started with the What If We Were Real stuff. So it was just sort of a journey into discovering the power of taking the masks off and being real.
Yeah. I mean, it's really fantastic. And like we said, you know, and of course you said there's the Christmas album in there too, but it really seems like your albums have been kind of that, the spirit of emancipation and just recognizing who we are in Christ and what that means and what that equips us to do as we move along in life, knowing that there are different stages in life and, you know, you're single now and you're recording now and whatever, and we don't know where God's going to have you in 5 years. So I think that's pretty powerful.
Thank you.
So what is your, looking ahead at the next year, what really is your hope for the next year?
Honestly, just to continue doing what the Lord has called me to. And I love my life. I love that I get to meet people and not just sing and entertain, but actually make an impact on people's lives. So if my life continued the way it has been, great. But I'm just holding on to the Lord and knowing he'll take me wherever he wants me to go.
Okay. Well, Mandy, so we have to let you go. You have got a full day of interviews. I want to just say again, the new album is What If We Were Real. You can find out all things Mandisa at MandisaOfficial.com. That is her website. Also, check her out on Twitter and on Facebook and all the social media. I know you tweeted when you had hit your 100-pound goal there, that first one, and everyone was like, ah! You will be presenting at the Doves this year. You're going to be all over the place. And then, of course, when you and I start touring together, we'll be out on the road as well. So
coordinating our dance moves. Sounds great. Thank
exactly.
you so much.
Thanks, Mandisa. You have a great day. You come and visit us here at the Boundless Show sometime.
Sure will.
Hopefully we can do that. And so great talking to you. You have a wonderful day and thanks so much.
Thank you too, Lisa. Okay. Bye-bye.
All right, we are opening up this week's inbox, and I have Sandy Jansen back in the studio. Sandy, welcome.
Thank you, Lisa. It's great to be back.
Great to have you back. So we're going to tackle a question here, and you're going to help us out with
this listener.
Bring it on. So here we go. Okay, it starts. I have been in a relationship with a wonderful guy for the past 5 months. He tells me he loves me, and I know I love him too. The only problem is, he said that when he first met me, he wasn't attracted to me at all. This makes me very upset and has made me upset since our first date. I'm not an unattractive girl, so I don't understand why he didn't think I was pretty. This hurts more than I can say, and it's almost become a barrier between us. I've struggled with self-esteem issues my entire life, and I can't seem to get over this problem. Sometimes I even wonder if I'm better off being with someone who has always found me attractive. Am I just being vain, or is there something deeper to this? How can I get over feeling that I'm so hideous and worthless to him? It's a lot of deep-seated stuff with that one.
There is indeed. So let's simplify the response to it. I am hearing that she's concerned about him finding her attractive. I think her focal point needs to be different. While I really appreciate at my age someone younger being concerned about how they look and how they come across and whether they're attractive, you know, do I look pretty in this dress, all those things. But the deeper issue here is her focus of her heart. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really important what she said, that I'm actually seeing a counselor this week to deal with some of the issues of her feeling low self-esteem and a lack of self-confidence, because that's the heart of the issue. We tend to project onto other relationships the woundedness in our own hearts. And so for her to give herself the gift of sitting with a counselor and doing some reflection on those issues, to identify where did this start, you know, to examine her own relationships. And often with girls, whether it sounds like the common line or not, it often begins with our fathers and wanting to feel accepted and to feel loved. My encouragement to this young woman is to be still for a while and to enjoy the time that she's in. Enjoy dating this young man, but also take the time to really examine her own heart and what does she want? It's not just about, does he like me? Does he think I'm pretty? Or even spinning her wheels, resenting a remark that was, I think, for a guy, pretty innocent. Mm-hmm. You recently had the Farrells on the broadcast, and I enjoyed that broadcast because they talked about the differences in how men and women communicate. And I think that may be part of the issue here, that what he said to her in terms of, an offhand remark, well, gee, I didn't find you that attractive on a scale of, you mm-hmm. know, 1 to 10. Mm-hmm. For her, that's everything. It's like, oh my gosh, I think, you know, anyway.
Yeah.
So that's my thought, is to take some time, take a deep breath, mm-hmm. spend some time in counseling, do some introspective work, but also to find her identity in her relationship with the Lord, mm-hmm. to pursue her identity from the Father heart of God. And yeah. while that may sound too spiritual, ultimately, that's where our answers and our strength and our identity lies in that.
Yeah, because I think there could be some fear on her part that if he didn't find me attractive at first, what if at some point in the future he doesn't find me attractive? And so there's kind of that, you know, I could see where her fear comes from. But she has to, I think, come to a point where she says, he now says he loves me. I have to choose to believe him in that. I mean, it's it's almost like she doesn't want to believe him, or is going to make him prove over and over again or something, you know. And like I said, or like you said earlier, I think that comes back to an issue with the Lord and recognizing where does her identity lie and what does that look like to gain the confidence that, you know, she's worth loving. I mean, she's lovable and he has said he loves her. And so looking at it that way, that's good.
Absolutely. And the other piece to that is that life within the confines of marriage, if this couple were to marry, life is difficult, and there are many, many challenges in marriage. Mm-hmm. And understanding and trusting in the relationship means honest communication. Mm-hmm. But it has to come from a place where they are secure in who they are in their own relationship with the Lord as well. So
that's good. Well, thanks so much, Sandy. That's great. As always, everyone, we want to hear from you. Write to us at editor@boundless.org so we can get your question in the queue for a future show, whether it be Sandy or James or someone else from our counseling team or Candace. We always love getting these different perspectives and expert advice. So that is it for this week's show. As you are following our inbox from previous shows or following comments that we've had or questions we've had or interviews, please continue to do that. In the meantime, I'm your host, Lisa Anderson, for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of Boundless.org, focus on the family.